Would the climate task force please light the chalice as I share these words for our call to worship? Maybe now spring is on the verge. The green shoots will not wilt, the buds will not shiver. The faint green on tree branches will find the sun that draws it out. Maybe now the winter tension that lingers in us will melt. Maybe now warmth, maybe now new life, maybe now hope, because this change of season insists on it. Now and here, welcome spring. Welcome, one and all. For this Earth Day, I have a story to tell, and I will need your help. I'll let you know how and when in a moment, but let me tell you just a little bit about a little background to the story. Before I joined you here as your interim minister, I served our congregation in Jamaica Plain for 3 years. And during that time, I joined with the neighborhood and folks in the congregation to try and stop the West Roxbury Lateral Pipeline, a high-pressure fracked gas pipeline requested by National Grid as part of a larger project to increase their capacity. The route of the West Rox pipeline goes through a variety of densely packed neighborhoods near a business district, and I'll tell you more about the most complicated place that it passes in a minute. The activist did all the right things, you might say. They worked with the company, Spectra Energy, the city council, the mayor. They took their case to the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, and even with the support of the mayor and city council, the pipeline went ahead. So then they decided that it was time perhaps to take a different approach, and they decided to paint a picture showing exactly why the route of the pipeline was not a good idea. They used red paint and big brushes, and this is where you come in. Do we have some painters ready to go? If any of you would like to experience the pipeline route painting process, come on up, join the painters. We have brushes, thanks to Michelle, and we have, come on down. This is a big job. We need help. We got lots of brushes. So one early morning in West Roxbury, some of the protesters gathered, and they had buckets of red paint, and they had brushes. And as the sun was coming up, they started to make their way through the neighborhood. And they were going along the street where the pipeline was going to run. And as they went, they took out their brushes and they painted giant red stripes on the pavement to be sure that the route that the pipeline would travel was perfectly clear to everybody who would go by. And they painted for what seemed like hours. They kept painting big red stripes. They passed through neighborhoods where there were a lot of people living, tall houses, short houses, all kinds of houses. They kept painting. And then, as they were going through the neighborhood, oh my, they got to a very particular place in town. Painters, if you can hang on, I need people who would like to make noise. Is there anybody? Oh, come on. All right, noisemakers. I'm going to need you to sneak around the painters and go into the beware back there, the back pew. All right? Thank you, noisy people. Painters, hang on. Think about your route. Oh, come on. Yeah. I am sorry. I have my back to you guys all the time. I'm glad you come anyways. That's really important. Okay, so let me say then that where the painters are paused in the middle of a city neighborhood, they have stopped by this big area that has very large equipment and rocks very deep in the ground, and what happens there is blasting. This is an active, would you mind repeating that? Exactly.
Exactly. You would... You would think they'd done this before, wouldn't you? Okay, Corey, calm down for just one hot minute, okay? Painters, you are... Huh? No. I mean, you could, but it would be distracting to the preacher, so please don't. So, painters, you are just amazed as you paint this stripe to know that as you keep going, there is this quarry. And here's what happens. Before they get ready to blast, a huge horn blows. I swear they've done this before. And then there's shaking of the ground. You can, yeah, it shakes all the way over here. Don't be worried about that part. So they're shaking, and then there is a huge... Gosh, they're good. We are having a blast, thank you, ma'am. Yes, we are. So the painters who have now had kind of enough of the quarry are going to keep painting that pipeline route. So you've gone through the neighborhood and the... quarry people, you can kind of shake and mutter back there for a minute. So they're painting the pipeline route. They're going through the neighborhood. They're now in the business district. There are all kinds of businesses lining the streets. There's traffic, all kinds of things. And they have painted this red stripe all along the road. And not only that, but just in case it wasn't clear to the people who lived and worked in that area of West Roxbury, they wrote the big word pipeline in the street, too, to make sure. The painters did a really good job of making sure that route was marked. Thank you, painters. And the quarry, you want to do it one more time? Just kept... Clearly, I am not in control of this story any longer. Thank you. The quarry just kept on working. Quarry folks, thank you very much. Cautiously, carefully, come on back to your seat. Well, they tried that, and wouldn't you think that that would be enough to get people to pay attention and to decide that maybe having a high-pressure fracked gas pipeline run by an active quarry where blasting takes place on a regular basis would not be a good idea? Question mark? You would think so, but it wasn't enough. So they kept digging the trenches, they kept laying the... In fact, the pipeline is operational today. But at the time that we were doing all of this in hopes of getting in the way, we still believed we might make a difference. So the stripe didn't work. The contacts didn't work. There was one more thing they were going to try. And this time, they were going to get to the trench, and then some of the protesters were going to climb into the trench and lay down with the pipeline and refuse to move. So if there are any brave souls, so there's room for one or two adults. Come on. So this is our pipeline trench right here. Just imagine that there's a big pipe and that you've climbed in and you're going to find a place to lay down either underneath the pipe or right beside it. That's fine. You can lay on the pew, whichever you want. There were 13 people who climbed into that trench that day, and they laid by the pipe, and the workers came by and looked at them. Hello down there. How are you doing? Okay. And the workers took pictures of them. And the police were there, and they looked down, and they watched. Eventually, the police decided that they were going to have to remove all of the people who were laying in the trench by the pipeline. And so they asked them one by one, "We need you to move. Would you please get up?" And one by one, what do you think they said? No. And the police said, "Well, we can carry you out, or you can walk out under your own steam." And the protesters very politely said, "Well, thank you, but we'd prefer to be carried." And this went on for a while until finally, when they had to get these very brave, very peaceful, very strong protesters out of this trench, the special tactical unit of the Boston Fire Department showed up. And if any of you have always wanted to be a firefighter, this is your moment. Because the firefighters came in and carefully, very kindly, I think they may need a little help here, anybody? Carefully and kindly removed the protesters from the trench. Ugh. This is harder than it looks, folks. Very good. I think you've practiced this before. One of the things that the protesters did, as you can see from this fine example protester right here, was go limp. So the firefighters had to put them on stretchers to carry them out. Good job. Thank you all. So the protesters were taken out. They were taken to a police van. They were all charged with trespassing, which means that you had gone onto land that belonged to somebody else and you didn't have the permission to be there. They were charged with disorderly conduct, which basically meant they crawled into the trench and refused to move. And they were charged with resisting arrest because when the police asked them to move, they didn't, and the police had to carry them out. Most of the protesters pled guilty. They said, yeah, we did all those things, and we did them for a very good reason, because the pipeline is going to hurt folks, and it's going to hurt the neighborhood. But 13 of the protesters decided they were not going to plead guilty. They were going to take a chance on going to trial to see if they might have the opportunity to make their case in court.
So I'm going to be telling a story today. A couple of weeks ago, Tracy spoke about the need to shout out and to not just talk, but to do something about it. And this is a story that I'm going to share today called One... Excuse me, Rebecca and Lisa, what are you doing? Why are you doing this?
If I had died for every one of these that I have in my pantry closet, you know what I mean? I got enough.
Oh, all right. Okay, well, I want you to imagine if this was true, that everywhere you looked, there was plastic bags. And you probably have seen something similar if you've ever gone into the woods. I always wonder how all the trash gets in the woods. It just doesn't seem right to me. And, or if you go and you take a drive on the side of the highway, how much trash is there? Now imagine if you were to live in a place where there were no places that picked up garbage, where there were no recycling, where people literally threw things on the ground. And I'm going to tell you a story, a true story of a woman named Isoto Cisse, who lived in Gambia, which is in Africa. And one day she was traveling home with her basket of fruit on her head, and the basket broke. And the basket was made of palm leaves, and so she had it. It was raining. The basket broke, and it tipped, and her fruit tumbled out. One fruit, then two, then 10. And she kicked the basket into the dirt because she knew it would break down. Suddenly, something silky danced past her eyes, softening her anger. It moves like a flag, flapping in the wind, and settled under a tamarind tree. Isatu slides the strange fabric through her fingers and discovers it can carry things inside. She gathers her fruits in the bag, and it was a bag just like the ones that are scattered throughout our church right now. Four goats greet Isatu as she arrives at Grandmother Mambamba's house. And Grandmother says, "Hurry in before the rain soaks your beautiful mabuda." Isatu scurries in, and Grandmother serves spicy rice and fish. Rain drums on the creaking aluminum roof. Isatu is nervous, and she says, I broke your basket, but I found this." "Plastic," Grandmother frowns. "There's more in the city." Day after day, Isatu watches neighbors tote their things in bright blue or black plastic bags. Children slurp water and wanjo, which is like a juice, from tiny holes poked in clear bags. Market trays fill with minties wrapped in rainbows of plastic. The collars are beautiful, she thinks. She swings her bag high, and then the handle breaks. One paper escapes, then two, then ten. Isatou shakes the sand off her papers, and another plastic bag floats by, and she tucks her things inside this one. The torn bag is useless now. She drops it to the dirt, as everyone does. There's nowhere else to put it. Day after day, the bag she dropped is still there. One plastic bag becomes two, then ten, then 100. Plastic isn't beautiful anymore, she thinks. Her feet step down a cleaner path, and the thought floats away. Years pass, and Isatou grows into a woman. She barely notices the ugliness growing around her, until the ugliness finds its way to her. Isatou is heading home again, and she hears a goat crying and hurries towards her grandmother's house. Why is it tied up? Where are the other goats? Inside, the butcher is speaking in a low voice. Many goats have been eating these, he says. The bags twist around their insides, and the animals cannot survive. Now three of your goats and so many other goats in the village have died. Grandmother Mamamba's powerful shoulders sag. Isatou knows she must be strong and do something, but what? Isatou's feet lead her to the old, ugly road. A pile of garbage stands as wide as grandmother's cooking hut. Mosquitoes swarm near dirty pools of water alongside the pile. Smoke from burning plastic stings her nose. Her feet back away. She sees goats scampering past. They forage through the trash for food. Her feet stop. She knows too much to ignore it now. Holding her breath, she plucks out one plastic bag from the pile, then two, then ten, then 100. What can we do? Isatou asks her friends. Let's wash them, says Fatim, pulling out Momo soap. Maram grabs a bucket, and Insha fetches water from the well. Peggy finds clothespins, and they clip the washed bags on the line. As the bags are drying, Isatou watches her sister crochet. Can you teach me? Yes. Her sister shows Isatou the stitches, then hands her a metal tool. Isatou's fingers busy themselves in, out, around. Thank you. Isatou finds a broomstick and carves her own tool from its wood. What's that for? Fatim asks. Isatou pauses. She and Peggy have an idea, but will their friends think it's crazy? Will their idea even work? Nervously, she explains the plan. What do you think? What do you think her plan is? And those of you that were here at the first service aren't allowed to say. What do you think she might be thinking with crocheting and this? What do you think?
Crochet plastic bags into other things.
That's right. And I'm going to share with you what she chose to do. One friend agrees to help, then two, then five. The woman cut bags into strips and roll them into spools of plastic thread. Before long, they teach themselves how to crochet with this thread. Her grandmother asks, how is the work? Slow, says Isatou. Some people in the village laugh at us. Others call us dirty. But I believe what we're doing is good. The women crochet by candlelight away from those who mock them. Until a morning comes when they will no longer work in secret. Fingers sore and blistered, Isatou hauls the recycled purses to the city. One person laughs at her, then two, then ten, then... One woman lays Dalasi coins on the table. She chooses a purse and shows it to one friend, then two, then ten. Soon everyone wants one. Isatou fills her own purse with Dalasi. She zips it shut and rides home to tell grandmother she has enough money now to buy a goat. When she passes by the pile of rubbish, she smiles because it is smaller now. She tells herself one day it will be gone and my house will be beautiful. And one day it was. And this is a true story. It was written by a woman who was a volunteer who went to Africa and was a teacher in the town and saw these piles of trash in other towns and then went to the town where Isatou and her friends started this work. And it's now providing the people in their village with livelihood as well as cleaning up this village. And
Something else that's happened from this, people have learned that they can crochet with plastic bags, and I know that there are several groups that are taking these plastic bags and crocheting them into mats in the United States for people who are homeless to use because they're waterproof. So they become sleeping mats. So it is a true carrying out of not just seeing something that's wrong with the earth, but truly taking care of the earth by finding a way to recycle. So that is my story for the day. I will have this down in the vestry. The pictures are really wonderful. There's actually a couple pictures, though not really good ones, of the actual people who are involved in this mission. And I'll put it down in the coffee hour.
If only it had been enough for the pipeline protesters when they did the right things, working with the energy company, the city council, the mayor, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, making the case that the risk of harm mattered more than the reasons for the project. If only it had been enough to show people that red line, show where the pipeline goes, not on a map, but in real life. If only it had been enough to point to the active blasting quarry, a fracked gas pipeline here and the quarry there, but none of that was enough. In June of 2016, after more than a year of protest and many arrests, 23 protesters climbed into the pipeline trench, laid down, and refused to leave. After several hours, all the protesters were removed by the Boston Fire Department's technical rescue squad. 13 of the 23 decided to go to trial rather than plead guilty to trespassing, disorderly conduct, or resisting arrest. They hoped to make their case that their civil disobedience was necessary because of the threat to the well-being of the community and the planet posed by the pipeline and the fracked gas infrastructure of which it was a part. Throughout the discovery process preceding trial, which lasted more than a year, the defendants and the judge pressed Spectra, the company laying the pipeline, on a number of issues, including a request to present the safety plan it claimed it had. It was supposed to be a plan for what to do in the event of a leak or an explosion. First responders who served West Roxbury knew well that a pipeline disaster would impact at least 30 city blocks. Months passed, and finally, the company admitted to the judge and the court that no such plan ever existed. As the trial was set to begin, the prosecution downgraded charges from criminal to civil, making them sort of like a parking ticket. And with all that, the charges could easily have been dropped and the case simply ended. Instead, something extraordinary happened. West Roxbury District Court Judge Mary Ann Driscoll allowed the protesters to make their final statements in court. Some of them spoke about community safety, about the pipeline route that passed through densely populated neighborhoods, and past that active quarry where bedrock is regularly blasted. Others spoke about the increase in greenhouse gas emissions and the harm climate change is doing around the world. After all the defendants had testified, the judge pronounced them not guilty, by reason of necessity. Their acts of civil disobedience were a necessity in the face of the risk of harm posed by that pipeline. The ruling, the first of its kind in a civil case involving climate protesters, is both a joy and a concern. The joy is that the protesters were able to make their case, and though it is a long shot, it may provide a touchstone, in other words, a precedent for future legal action. The concern is that the ruling is an admission and to further confirmation that the dangers posed by climate change, the risks posed by a high-pressure fracked gas pipeline running through neighborhoods and business districts and by the quarry and near schools, those risks are real and require immediate and extraordinary action. The joy and concern of Judge Driscoll's ruling got to me. How do I understand? How do I think about? How do I balance choice and necessity in the context of justice? I am sorry to say that there will be no easy answer forthcoming in this moment to that question. And here is another thing that got to me. One of those at the trench the day of the arrests was the Reverend Mariama White Hammond, one of the pastors at Bethel African Methodist Episcopal Church in Jamaica Plain. Mariama is a woman of color, a climate justice activist who works tirelessly, and if you could bold, underline, italicize, and otherwise emphasize tireless, you would maybe get close to how hard she really does work. Mariama works tirelessly to address racial justice and climate justice together. When she spoke to the crowd at the trench the day of the arrests, she told them this: I debated whether or not it's good to be here today, because all of these officers have to be here. And if I had my choice, I'd rather them be figuring out the sources of violence in our neighborhood and working to stop it. But I'm here today because I believe we can lay to rest the spirit of exploitation and extraction that has brought us to such a terrible place. Okay, Mariama, I hear ya. We can lay to rest the spirit of exploitation and extraction that has brought us to such a terrible place. The words of Thich Nhat Hanh: water flows from high in the mountains. Water runs deep in the earth. Miraculously, water comes to us and sustains us all. Water flows over these hands. May we use them skillfully to preserve our precious planet.